Welcome to Daily Devotion with Ken Gurley. Devotions designed to inspire you on your daily walk with God. Each day we walk through the vital principles of the abundant life. Our Lord can do above and beyond all we ask or think. Here's your host, Ken Gurley.
It is often said that silence is golden, and that may be the case. We are told to be sweet. If we can't say anything nice, don't speak. Proverbs 17:28 says, "Even a fool is considered wise when he's silent." So there are some times that silence may be golden. When we don't say what we think without examining it, praying over it, silence is perhaps golden when we refrain from criticizing and judging people. For how can we judge the tiny grain of sand in someone else's eyes when we can't spot the tree in our own? Silence is golden when we ponder the deep things. When Mary heard what the angel said, she pondered them in her heart. But silence becomes fool's gold when we refuse to speak up in the face of evil. Hello, my name is Ken Gurley, and here this week on Daily Devotion, we're talking about a nation arising. Today, I want to focus on the danger of silence. Adam and Eve were introduced to the walking voice in the garden. They talked with God. They walked with him in the cool of the day. But when the serpent spoke to Eve from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, Adam stood by silently. In fact, you would think he wasn't even there, but he heard every word spoken. He heard his alter ego, his helpmate, his wife, dialoguing with the enemy, and he said nothing. Silence in the garden led to the ultimate tragedy, the fall of mankind. Silence, in a way, remains the ultimate tragedy. In Leviticus 5, we're cautioned to not be silent when a public charge is made, and we know something about it. In Ezekiel 3, we're cautioned to not be silent in the face of wickedness. If the watchman sounds the trumpet, if the watchman warns, he's innocent. If he remains silent, he's guilty and condemned. When we are silent, evil wins. There was a time I spent reading the many influential books written about the civil rights movement. I read the Taylor Branch trilogy of the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and what a great series that is. For me, it gave texture and understanding to the years I didn't understand as a child. As we know, Lincoln's assassination at the close of the Civil War preempted what could have been done during the Reconstruction years, what might have happened but did not, what should have happened but did not. And for a century, an emancipated people were not really free at all. Jim Crow was the caste system that existed largely through state and local statutes that perpetuated disparities and injustices. The 60s marked the tumultuous years that Jim Crow was challenged, and finally the Civil Rights Bill was passed, and change, albeit slowly, started. But that time remained somewhat unresolved, for America rushed into the Vietnam War and a new series of conflicts. But the civil disobedience led by Dr. King, inspired by Mahatma Gandhi, was motivated by peaceful marches, sit-ins, clearly stating positions, and Dr. King at the forefront. His speeches and sermons were memorable. His letter from a Birmingham jail, insightful, and he and so many others led the way during that season. Two quotes by Dr. King on the subject of silence. "In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends." So true. It's not the sticks and stones of people who rise up against us that cut the deepest. It's the silence of people who did not stand up for us, who did not rise up in our defense. That's what hurts the most. But the second quote is even more poignant, because Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said the ultimate tragedy is not the oppression and cruelty by the bad people, but the silence over that by the good people. Silence from people who should know better is the ultimate tragedy. We know there are a lot of bad things that happen in life. Injustices come in all flavors, varieties, and forms. Disappointments and setbacks, human failures, conflicts, betrayals. But there's no tragedy quite like silence, because silence is not the choice of anyone else. It's our choice. It's the sin of Adam in our own flesh. Silence is the cousin of cowardice. Speech is the son of courage. Elie Wiesel, Holocaust survivor, once said, "We must always take sides. Neutrality helps the oppressors, never the victims. Silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented. The opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. All that is good, all that is holy and true are challenged by silence." It was during the civil rights era, many, many people remained silent. They saw the injustices. They just said, "We don't want to get involved. Leave us out of it." This indifference expressed by silence is the opposite of love. It's the ultimate tragedy. For you and I have a choice. We are made in the image of God. What all that means is probably beyond our comprehension. But one thing it means is that we are fashioned after the voice that was walking in the garden, the one who appeared earlier at the creation of the world as the voice, as the word, as the spoken word. He spoke and light overcame darkness. He spoke and foundations formed in the deep, earth, sea, and heaven separated. He spoke and life appeared, plants, animals, fish, fowl. He stooped. He made man from the clay and breathed into the nostrils of mankind the breath of life. We were created, fashioned, formed in his image. He made us like him, like the voice that appeared in Genesis 1. You and I not only have a voice, we are a voice. For the words we speak reveal who we are. From the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. It was said by a woman over a fire to Simon Peter, "Your speech betrays you. I detect the accent of a Galilean." Our voice is revelatory. Our voice expresses who we are, who we are not, who and what we value. And within that voice is something unique, something powerful. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. When we speak, we create. We speak and can speak life into others. Oh, the power of speech. Yet silence, too, has a formidable power. For when we are silent, a vacuum forms. And nature, it's said, abhors a vacuum. And wherever there's a spiritual vacuum, wherever there is silence, evil steps in. Now, Eve may would have sinned anyway, drawn away by her own lust, but Adam sinned, too. It was the sin of silence. He didn't speak up. He didn't give voice to what God would say. We sin when we don't speak up. Evil wins in the void and vacuum of silence. People struggle with this understanding. They say, God will have his way, and in the end, God will. A new heaven is coming. A new earth is on its way. The kingdom of heaven will manifest itself, and the King of all glory will rule and reign. Yet for now, God does not always have his way. He awaits our voices. He waits on us to speak. This is why we are commanded to pray that his will be accomplished, because his will is not always accomplished without you and me getting involved. He asks us to exercise our voice. Our voices to blend in some sublime choir, ascending to heaven, invading heaven with our prayers and petitions. God wishes to hear from us. He longs to hear our voice. He wants us to boldly proclaim our requests, our affirmations, such that his will may be done in our lives, our families' lives, our nation, our world. We can ill afford to be silent. Haile Selassie was the modernizing ruler of Ethiopia decades back, abolished slavery, made numerous reforms. He once said, "Throughout history, it has been the inaction of those who could have acted, the indifference of those who should have known better, the silence of the voice of justice when it mattered most, that it made it possible for evil to triumph." When Hitler came to power in the 30s, hard to believe, getting close to a century ago, Hitler believed that Christians would remain silent, and he was largely correct. Oh, there were a few fearless voices who came into the reality that they must speak. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, as a young preacher, he refused to remain silent. At the very height of Hitler's popularity in Germany, Bonhoeffer said to those who would listen, "The church must confess that she has not raised her voice on behalf of the victims and has not found a way to hasten to their aid." That's where we are in America. The ominous attempts to muzzle voices have begun. Redefining truth as hate speech, there is an attempt to silence the voice of truth. Speak up and you'll be canceled. Speak out and you will be deplatformed. It's happening all across America and the Western world. Those who were called politically incorrect yesterday are being called domestic enemies today. So I ask you, my brother, my sister, with what is happening in our nation, why are we silent? Isaiah said that the Messiah would stand silent before his accusers as a sheep at the shearers. He would open not his mouth. And indeed, Christ stood before Pilate and Herod with few, if any, words. In a rigged trial where the judgment was predetermined, Jesus had little to say. He reserved his voice for when it mattered. Today, however, our voice is needed. Bobby Kennedy, whose life was ended in those tumultuous 60s, he once said, "Each time a man stands up for an ideal, or acts to improve the lot of others, or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope." We have seen the waves of despair. We now need the ripples of hope. We need voices who will rise against oppression and injustice. We need people who will not be quiet. America, the Western world, the entire world is on a path to destruction. The slippery slope of moral relativism has now become an avalanche of immorality. We cannot be silent, cannot be intimidated. We can't be muzzled. We must raise our voices. We do participate in the democratic process, but we have a higher calling than that. God has not called us to be merely social change agents or protesters or agitators. God has called us to be faithful representatives of His truth and His word. We must speak truth in love. There is only one God, and He doesn't need any of our man-made thrones. There is only one God, and He has a character which is holy. There is a heaven, there is a hell. We have to keep our eyes on eternity. What our nation and world needs is a spiritual rebirth and awakening. And for that to happen, we people of faith can ill afford to be silent. We have a part to play in this. We must lift our voices. Observers of that 1857 prayer revival noted the different character of prayer requests during that season. They didn't pray for personal needs. They prayed for city-shaking outpourings. That God's grace would manifest itself on the streets of the cities, that God's power would be poured out in businesses, courts, and the governments of the land. Let's elevate our gaze today. Let's raise our voices. For evil to win, good men and women just have to be silent. But we can't let that happen. We are going to raise our voices. We're going to cry out to the Lord and make an appeal to heaven.
Thank you for sharing in daily devotion with Ken Gurley. We pray this ministry has been a source of encouragement and strength to you. Please be mindful that your financial support enables us to meet with you each day. To give a donation or connect with us, visit our website at kengurley.com. There you will also find the latest books, podcasts, and resources. Blessed 90 Days to Change Your World is Pastor Gurley's latest book. You can get your copy of this life-changing book at kengurley.com. May God's favor rest on you in every way until we meet again.